All right. Should we get started?
Please, go ahead. Yes, launch.
All right, great. Good morning. My name is Chintan Vaishnav. I teach at the Sloan School of Management. And over the next 20 minutes or so, I'm going to try to convince you that applying this somewhat old, very well-known lens of dominant design to the future of video, which is, as we are experiencing, a fairly messy space, could bring some insights that are strategic and action-oriented. So let's get started. I want us to start with, let's see. Okay, I want us to start with an exercise. I want you to close your eyes for a moment. I promise I'll let you open it in a minute, but and I want us to think about a few things. So can you create a picture of in your head of a light bulb? No pun intended here, a picture of a light bulb in your head. Next, how about an automobile? Okay, next, how about a music player? And then the last one, how about watching a movie on a screen? Okay, exercise is done. You can open your eyes. So let me hazard a guess that something like this came to your head when you thought about a light bulb. Did anything else come to anyone's head? Okay. Something like this came to your head when you thought about an automobile. Reasonable? On music player, maybe there are a few options. How many people thought of this as a music player? No, nobody here thought of this as a music player. How about something like this? Yeah, okay. And how about this, some variant of this? So a lot of people here thought of this. Okay, excellent. Watching a movie on a screen, maybe, how many people thought of this? Okay, great. Yeah. What about on a TV? Okay, excellent. How about on a laptop? Okay. How about on an iPad or something similar? Okay. How about on a phone? Okay. Well, so the bottom line here is that the first two are examples where a dominant design, or dominant form of an experience has emerged. The last two, and particularly the last one, is up for grabs, as you can see. You know, our notion of what it means is changing. So let me give you a little bit of flash of theory. This starts in 1975 with Professor Utterback, who is here at Sloan School, and Abernathy, and then has continued on. That a specific path along an industry's design hierarchy, which establishes dominance among competing design paths, is a dominant design. So the things we know about it are that, you know, there is intense variation and selection before the dominant design arises. There's a lot of experimentation by many different players. And then you reach a dominant design where the performance requirements drastically reduced to a few parameters that one ought to think about if you want to enter that industry altogether and want to be legitimate. But then it generally, people think that one may not be able to predetermine what that dominant design will be. So the classic example that people use is one of the QWERTY keyboard that we couldn't have predetermined its layout because we didn't think of this mechanical locking of the keys and so on. But broader reason for not being able to determine it is that, first of all, a dominant design is not at an extreme performance for either technology or business model or consumer preferences. It's somewhere a little scaled down from that extreme performance that one could deliver. And second, it's emergent in that it arises from various factors, not from any one factor in particular. So what may be predictive here is that if we can analyze these design hierarchies as they emerge. So you can think about the work Natalie has been doing on the future of video for all these years. Essentially, we are sort of going down a certain design hierarchy as we hear about it in its evolution. If we can analyze it from the perspective of dominant design, we may have some strategic insight, is what I'd like to contend. Now, even the light bulb, the interesting thing is that even the light bulb was not the simple light bulb and the only single way in which we can anymore think about it when it came about. So in 1880, when Edison set up his factory, and tried it out on a ship first and then in New York and so on. By 85, he was already suing a bunch of imitators. And if you look at the period of 1875 to 1885, the 10 years, there were many different types of bulbs like these. So one, two, three, four. This was Edison's early version, and this is the one that we are stuck with. Even the base of the bulb was not standardized during that period. So let's go back to a little more of the flash of theory. If you think about rate of major innovation on y-axis and the timeline on the x-axis, one way to think about product versus process innovation and its implications in the context of dominant design is to start thinking about it first as a fluid phase where there is intense variation and competition by those who are innovating. So the product innovation is high. The process innovation is, the process is relatively flexible. So it's easier to make larger changes with comparatively smaller cost. Then as we move on, one enters this transitional phase where a couple of things happen. One, in terms of the market, the rising demand forces suppliers to rethink their processes in radical ways so that the processes fundamentally change and become moderately complex and costly to change. On the product side, what happens is that out of the multiple variations that are there, a variation or two begin to gain market share, and there is a great degree of defeaturing that happens in terms of sort of letting go of features that we were innovating along. And then arises this dominant design. Once that happens, then we are, by the way, notice that this is the middle is the phase of sales, maximizing sales. So you are just trying to capture as much market as you can. But after the dominant design, the product innovation is very incremental at this point. The process generally gets locked into a more capital intensive, harder to change process. And that's when the industry sort of gets locked into this phase. So this has been shown in several industries, say automobile, TV, typewriters, integrated circuit, and so on. And in this chart, what you see is that on the x-axis, this is the time, and the y-axis is the number of firms in the market. And in each case, what you see is that there are many firms innovating initially, and then after the dominant design, there are market exits and some kind of saturation. So And before the dominant design, it's easier. So here are the hypotheses that are strategic and are of importance to us. Before the rise of the dominant design, it's easier to enter the market. There's greater risk, but there's also greater likelihood of success. And the competition is on the basis of innovation. After the dominant design, the entry in the market is harder. The risk is lower, but the likelihood of success is lower. And the competition is based on cost and quality. So question is, can we leverage these insights to understand the future of video? So if we go back to a chart that Natalie had presented maybe 8 months or so ago, where what you see, I don't expect you to understand fully these supply chains. What I'm trying to show you is that on the top is the MVPD supply chain. On the bottom is the online video distribution supply chain, such as Netflix and Amazon and others. And you see that there's an incredible complexity in terms of producing content, distributing it, in terms of the networks that and service that lead get the content to the consumer, and in terms of the viewing. So this is clearly a case of predominant design, if you would. And my sense is that understanding these design hierarchies from the dominant design lens may lead to some interesting insights. So I want to leave us with a yet another exercise. Let me see if I could bring it up. Still thinking. So imagine I asked you the following question. Which hypothesis do you believe in the most when it comes to video over IP experience? That first, that it will largely converge to a single dominant form of experience. Second, it will converge as a distinct experience at each layer, so network or service or applications or devices or what have you, but not system as a whole. And third, it will not converge. It will never converge as a single dominant form of experience. Could you go to this website, either PollEV, pollev.com/chintanvaish074, or send a text to this number, 37607. First send chintanvaish074. It's not case sensitive there. It'll send you a confirmation, and then send your choice, 1, 2, or 3. I have one result. Oh, that's right. I figured that. Okay, 9. We have. No, that can be a separate thing.
My question is, when I think of dominant design, normally, I you know, what comes to mind, especially now, is the Tesla versus the car industry as a in general, which is really not the form factor, but more under the hood. What we're talking here, especially in light of the last slide, is more of a value chain reconstruction. So are we talking, I mean, are you just borrowing from the dominant design into the experience in the value chain, or are we talking about redesigning the whole under the hood of the video industry, if you know what I mean by that. To me, it's more of a value chain reconstruction.
That's an important question, because a large number of times, this framework has been applied to products. So to think about applying it to service, or an experience, or a value chain is, as somebody trying to do research in this domain, it's one of the hidden motives of posing this question. So we are thinking about that. Karen.
Do you want questions now, or do you want to wait?
Sure. Let me just flash this quickly, and then we can go to questions. All right. So this is what we think. Okay.
Why don't we go to questions? We can analyze it along the way. Right. So I think, actually, my question may relate to some of this. When I think about video experience, it's not just video, the experience is, you know, when I grew up, there was one TV in the house, and we all gathered around the TV. It was a social family experience. It wasn't about the video. It was about the social family experience. That you're not going to do that around my cell phone. The experience that I want to have may be less about the particular video or the particular delivery system than how I'm using it and what all the other ancillary, you know, what it's about in some sense. If I'm watching kitty videos, then I'll do one thing. If I'm going to sit down and watch a two-hour movie, I'm looking for a different experience. Maybe I'm looking for an experience that I know my best friend is going to share also, and then we're going to go and talk about it or something. There's something more to it than just the video itself and the delivery system of the video.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for how that plays into this kind of thing rather than because the choices about the technology and how that evolves and what becomes a dominant design, to some extent, may be driven by what kind of experience, what is it you're delivering? It's not just that you're delivering a video, you're delivering a shared experience or a social experience or a teaching experience or whatever it is. And you happen to use one technology or another that may become dominant, but it's because of that other more, you know, that social driver that something may become dominant, not just, I mean, for cars, you're not going to have a vehicle for every individual person because children can't drive, and it costs a lot. So there are a lot of things that are going to drive the dominant design that are larger than particular technologies.
Yeah. So that has implications at several levels, as I hear. Technological determinism or pushing certain technologies out once that form of dominant design arises. Although people working on it will accept that it's not just the technology that's doing it. I mean, emergence of that dominant form itself is social construction, if you would, in some sense. But in this case, you are saying that you would argue that there are multiple different contexts for which one would have to design. And so then maybe if that's the case, then one would probably then move to two where, you know, these different clusters, what was that word that we used there 10 years ago, constellations, will organize themselves to deliver to those individual contexts. Yeah, so that's how I'm reading. But yeah.
I think that's terrific. It's a really interesting view of things, although I got to admit I'm a little bit bollocksed by choice too, because it's kind of like, if you think about automobiles, it's kind of like worrying about the car at the same time of the road. And if we didn't have roads, we might all be driving whatever, tracked vehicles or all four-wheel drive, and the dominant design wasn't that because we had the roads. But it sounds like what you're saying, which sounds interesting, is that there's this symbiosis between what people can do and use in an effective way and what the technology can provide in an effective way. Like, I mean, initially the typewriter was mammothly hard to use and no particular reason to think it would catch on at all, but then people started to use it and gradually they gravitated towards that and it reached a stasis, which is the dominant design.
That's
so
right.
So your conclusion, therefore, is that we're going through a paradigm shift and that the dominant design for video is going to be substantially different from what it was in the past. Is that sort of where you're going with that? Because I believe it. Sounds like it.
I personally didn't have that hypothesis, the final thing that you said. But until then, I was kind of with you. In that, if I... Yeah, well, I... Well, so the two things that I actually, you know, truly speaking, I don't. What I do know though, that if one studied the announcements that we hear along that complicated supply chain every day in various parts of the world or in the news, and analyze it from the point of view of what features are being added, dropped, what people like, dislike. How are suppliers doing on excited about it, not excited about it? If we can deduce those notions, then collectively it might begin to tell us that this video experience may be quite different than what we have. But will it be quite different? That sense, I personally don't have that sense yet.
So, Chintan, this is really interesting because when we look at things like typewriters, they were kind of a specific purpose type of thing. They were kind of almost isolated from the context they're in. But when you look at what's happening in video, it's very much engaged with a whole series of other general purpose technologies like cell phones. So other people are doing a lot of the heavy lifting for the context in which video is being consumed. And it's interesting to understand what that kind of that loop feels like. It feels like that should be very different when somebody else is doing the heavy lifting of the other dimensions of it than if you're doing everything individually as you were with most other dominant designs. Any thoughts on that?
Actually, that's a very hard question. Because almost there's... In the other part of my work, where I'm doing work on technology and development at the Tata Center, we are realizing that even seemingly new experiences also get evaluated against existing contexts. You know, so for instance, take a solar lantern. When you give a solar lantern to somebody who has never had electricity or light in the evening, one might think that, this is completely new, so it would be evaluated without any particular context. But the context there is that they are used to living without light or electricity altogether. So I think even in, but here, I get your point, that legacy is more sort of widespread, and therefore it may cause certain path dependency that may limit some of the extreme design choices that one might induce. So is that a fair way of thinking about what you're saying? Yeah. Anything else?
So I guess I have two questions, and it's possible it's one question, but I can't tell. Are there certain kinds of contexts, circumstances, which lead a particular product into a space of dominant design, whereas in another case, it may be susceptible to continuous revision of the design concept? I mean, let me just give you an example.
Yeah.
Light bulbs have a tremendous network effect because of the base.
Yeah.
It's very useful if everybody have the same kind of base. Mm. With bicycles, which apparently emerge to a dominant design, they're sort of any bicycle can be any bicycle, you know. So I said, why does it?
There are times when it happens. Oh, yeah. There are times when it happens and when it doesn't happen.
Mm. Mm. So I don't know a lot of work in literature in that sense, but my hypothesis is that. A lot of these examples that I put up earlier in terms of the firm's entry and exit, the older examples, one of the things in common across them was that there was a larger fixed cost and smaller marginal cost of producing them. I think in the example that we are looking at, video, and you know, particularly with everyone having the internet access and the devices getting cheaper and so on, that notion of larger fixed costs is for delivering a single experience more efficiently and at the lowest cost possible in order for demand to rise, that assumption is violated. And so if we found something here, as I mentioned to you the last time we were talking, if we found something here that there are conditions under which dominant designs don't arise,
right,
then I think we have made a contribution.
I'm not sure if this is what David meant, but when he was asking, are there circumstances which lead a particular product into a space where there's a dominant design versus where there's just this continuous change? So there seems to be two issues. One is convergence to a single dominant design versus a stable dominant design, because my impression is that we're just going to have several dominant designs.
Yeah.
And they might be stable for quite some time, they might not, but I think there's a distinction between single versus stable.
What is the distinction between single versus stable? Sorry.
Well, in one case you won't, a dominant design won't emerge because things will just keep changing and changing and changing, or else you might just have like 10 light bulbs that will all be equally, they'll have complementary uses, but they'll all work together in some kind of a. I mean, that one of the points in the paper was the sort of interdependencies that exist between these new different forms that are emerging in the experience, and they may still converge to one dominant design, but
yeah.
I think it's the multiplicity of dominant designs that's one issue that's separate from having a stable dominant design.
So ten light bulbs each enjoying 1/10 of a market, is that stable or no?
It could be.
Yeah, so is there multiple but yet stable?
Yeah.
So I think generally the stable, I mean, I equate stable with knowing what form of experience or product to offer, and that remaining the same over time, equating it to stable, you know. So, but were you number two here?
No, I'm number three.
You're number three, okay. All right, yeah. So, but you, yeah. Okay, so but you're arguing for this, you know, multiple forms that stabilize, but not a single form.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I think that's, maybe I should end by asking this very quick, or putting up this thing. This is not a question, it's a question. This is the reason my last slide said, stops thinking. There. How about applying this lens to media space to know what the answer is?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Yeah.